They say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy?
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth.
Brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51. The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in, Hysteria Nation, to the podcast that's learned that ghosts stop chasing you when you start chasing them. This is Hysteria 51.
What the hell does that even mean?
Well, admittedly, I'm not exactly sure, but it sounded a little pithy and somewhat wise, so I threw it in.
Or you just play a lot of Mario Brothers. One of the two.
That's a good point. You should stay in your lane.
What was that? Wait, was that a Mario Kart reference there? What's going on?
Yeah, we're keeping the Nintendo theme. This from the talking toaster that thinks the quickest way to take over the world is to start a hedge fund that mostly invests in cat assassinations.
Prove I'm wrong.
There it is. I mean, defense there.
I suppose as long as he's functioning, he hasn't failed yet. Anyway, we are broadcasting from the lower fourth dimension, otherwise known as Chicago. My name is John Goforth, and the other sentient being that you're hearing from and sitting across from me is the man so viral, mosquitoes catch disease from him. Mr. Brainhand.
Thanks, John. Not sure if that was a dig or a compliment, but I'll choose to take it as both. That way I can both accept the compliment because, I mean, damn, I'm good. But at the same time, I could remain mad at you because that's also my just natural state. So it's a win-win.
I'd expect nothing less.
And back to your other point about C-Bot. I wasn't aware of this. Well, what's he doing with a hedge fund or whatever?
Well, okay. Like anything with him, it's a bit hard to track, but you know how there are like investment tools / funds out there that are mission driven, if you will.
Yep.
Meaning, you know, you put your money into it because it invests in sustainable energy or clean air or something like that. Mission driven. Basically, you hope to make money while not fucking the world at the same time.
Yeah, I'm, you know, not a fan, but aware of the dumb joke, and I'm aware of this.
So you're aware. Well, C-Bot wants to do the same thing, only he wants to invest in companies that work towards only one goal, the death of cats, felines.
That checks. Okay. Well, beyond the sheer idiocy of the idea, do those companies actually exist? Is that a thing?
A refreshingly large number do.
And the non-believers. We want the streets to flow out with the blood of the non-believer cheese muffins.
Okay. C-Bot, what the hell is that? I seriously doubt Kyle came to that one on his own.
While I appreciate the compliment, nope, that was all the coffee maker.
Kyle, what the hell are you talking about?
I don't know. Not sure what it means, but saw it on this awesome new show, Beavis and Butthead.
I am the great Cornholio. You have awakened my bunghole, and now you must pay. Will flow with the blood of the
non-believers. Well, first of all, that isn't new. You know what? Never mind. I'm not going to try to explain it. If there is one show that those two bozos shouldn't be peer modeling from, it's probably Beavis and Butthead. And what a timely show. Also.
It is true. Though it is a surprisingly cogent comparison, if you think about it.
That is true.
If you're new to the show and are wondering what the hell all of that has been, the angrier one that talked first is Conspiracy Bot. Brent built him in his lab to help produce the show. Instead, he spends his days drinking and scheming the demise of all felines, with a then small amount of time dedicated to taking over the world.
Yeah, and the coffee maker with a non-understanding of how life works is Kyle. C-Bot, in an attempt to match my laziness, and that's me talking, created Kyle to do his grunt work. But like me, he's constantly disappointed in his creation.
I know you are, but what am I?
A constant disappointment. I hate repeating myself.
Loser says what?
Ah, Lord.
All right. Enough from the robot peanut gallery, Brent. We have some ghosts to chase tonight and a special guest to help us do that. Before we bring him out, let's give you the Gophopedia on tonight's guest, renowned author specializing in the world of the weird, Mr. Mark Hartzman.
Yeah, he is steeped in all things weird. He's written about ghosts, Mars, Oliver Cromwell's embalmed head. I mean, who hasn't, though? So, you know, weird things on eBay, sideshow performers, unorthodox messages from God, and more. Literally our bread and butter, period.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen to this description. ABCnews.com called Hartzman, quote, one of America's leading connoisseurs of the bizarre. And even George Norrie, friend of the show, George Norrie from Coast to Coast, said, quote, he's as bizarre as Robert Ripley.
That's awesome. I love going to Ripley, believe it or not, places every time we travel. They're just.
Yeah, I've only actually been inside of one. I went to the one in Myrtle Beach,
South Carolina.
Yeah, raise up. believe it or not, there's a believe it or not there,
right? Yeah. Well, also, believe it or not, outside of his books, Hartman has written for Mental Floss. That's awesome. HuffPost, AOL, Weird News, and Bizarre Magazine, which is no longer in print, and that sucks because it was awesome. And he's discussed oddities on CNN, MSNBC, Ripley's Radio, Travel Channel's Mystery at the Museum. I mean, he's been all over the place, and he's an expert on missile mail, which was a real thing back in the day, and he's been on a lot of shows to talk about that, how they used missiles to send mail. Not to be outdone also, in keeping with our little Val Kilmer that we've been talking about, his wife is related to Mark Twain, who Val played in Citizen Twain.
That's true. Now, Brent, I'm assuming that you're already in contact with his people. He's going to need to update that part of his bio, discussed oddities on CNN, MSNBC, and Hysteria 51.
That's true.
To go there. Yeah.
Well, this is what they call in the business a resume builder show. You come on here when you're needing to pump that thing up a little bit.
I just enjoy the general idea that whenever people are referring to the business, they use the words Hysteria 51. Yeah, you know, in the business, Hysteria 51.
Well, in the business of world records, he owns 8 world records in lightweight juggling. So there's that, too. Figure that out. And he's been a Maury Povich and Wheel of Fortune.
So we're gonna have to ask him about Wheel of Fortune. Yeah, I'm gonna know all about Pat Sajak.
I literally, this guy, you guys are gonna like him. He's a lot of fun, and the book was fantastic. So we're gonna go to break. When we come back, Mark joins us to talk about his new book, Chasing Ghosts, a spirited, see what he did, their tour through the supernatural history of America, from its haunted sites to its famous ghosts to its ghost obsessed pop culture. That's all coming up after the break on Hysteria 51. Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it. So it's very high on pronunciation, too. So you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And you know, our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation. Yeah, that's right. But they design it for long-term retention, you know. If you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do, and then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users, use it because, like you said, it does seep in, and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition, and it hears you. You get to use, like, the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused or really cool. I'd go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and both of us have given the seal of approval because we want to do this long-term, and it's something that it works. You know, and we don't do long-term stuff like this. And this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times. And it's always now, right now. Get started. For very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, you're 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it. 50% off. RosettaStone.com/today. Do it today. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when Brent and I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, we thought, man, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. Brent is trying a plan right now and says that it works like a charm from Chicago to Nashville as he makes his big old move. Mint Mobile is working for him. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. So ditch the overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/hysteria. That's mintmobile, mintmobile.com/hysteria, hysteria. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/hysteria. $45 upfront payment required. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Nation, we are back, and as we promised, we have Mark Hartzman here. Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. We'd love to talk the world of the weird, the strange, and it is right up your alley, so to speak.
Yes. No, I love it. All things weird and strange. It's always fun to talk about.
I was, when we had said before we went to the break, we were reading a little exhibit. ABC News called you one of America's leading connoisseurs of the bizarre. That's a hell of a title. I like that.
I'm very happy with that title. Worked hard to maintain it.
Before we get to your book, one title that I got to bring up is one that you also can hang your hat on, and that is Wheel of Fortune winner. I mean, you made it to the last round. How does that happen? How did you get on Wheel of Fortune?
You know, it's like, that's a weird thing.
We don't actually care about your book. We're only here to talk about your Wheel of Fortune experience.
I honestly, this was never something that I expected to happen. And I'm not like someone who watches the show all the time. It's like, oh, that's my dream, is to get on Wheel of Fortune. I was just started watching it with my kids a little bit. You know, I used to watch when I was a little kid. My kids were enjoying it. So I was like, okay, I'll watch with you. And, you know, like anyone who's sitting at home on their couch, you know, you can solve puzzles fairly easily at a certain point, you know?
Sure.
So my kids were like, Dad, you're really good at this. You should go on the show. And they were like, this was what, 5? So like, they were like, let's say 11 and 9-ish around there. And I thought, well, I'm never going to get on the show. And I just try out, Dad. So I said, all right, let me make a little video and I'll send it in. We'll see what happens. So I did that. There were some directions on the website, so I followed the directions, sent it in, forgot all about it. And then like 6 months later, I got an email saying that they want me to come try out because they're going to be in New York, and I'm in New York City. So I actually couldn't make it that time. I was going to be out of town, and I let them know, and they said, don't worry about it. We'll get you next time we're in town. I thought, oh, that's nice of you. Okay. And sure enough, a year later, they email again. They said, hey, Mark, we're back in New York. We want you to try out. It's like, oh, wow. Thanks.
Yeah, one of those things where you just thought they were going to throw you on the garbage pile.
I just assume, like, you know, they've got millions of entries, right?
Right.
I mean, that's better follow-up than most of the salespeople I deal with.
Yeah, everyone there from top to bottom was fantastic to deal with. Pat and Vanna are super nice people. Like, everyone was just incredible to work with, I have to say. Anyway, so I tried out. I did well. And they sent me a letter a few weeks later saying, you're in our contestant pool. And then they had a show for me. And I flew out to LA and I had really good luck. And I just got back from my trip to Costa Rica that I won.
That
after a year delayed because of COVID.
Yeah. Wow. That is really awesome.
Yeah, well, congratulations, first
Thank
off.
You.
And all right. So as a longtime viewer of Wheel of Fortune, I wouldn't call myself a fan or anything, but I mean, gosh, I was, like you said, I was a kid and I was watching it, and I'm and Pat and Vanna are still there also. Yep. Pat, I've never seen someone who ages less than Pat Sajak.
Yeah. Oh my God, yeah. Right? Yeah.
In person, is it, what is he? He just, like, he's always got the quippy one-liners, and, you know, he's like the, if I was going to draw up a fictitious, this should be a host of a game show, I would come up with Pat Sajak. Like, what is it? What's he like in just chatting off camera?
Yeah, everything is so effortless for him. You know, like I've had this appreciation for how good he is at his job and why he's been doing it for 40 some years, whatever it is, you know? He puts you at ease right away. As soon as he comes out and talks to you, you're like, oh, okay. You know, any nerves you had just kind of go away.
Yeah.
He's very good like that. And yeah, it's just chatty and friendly. And Vanna was as well. Like I said, they were just genuinely nice people.
It's kind of the calm everybody down. I love that style of person. Just walks in a room and everyone's like, can breathe a sigh of relief.
Yeah. Like, okay, I can do this. Right. It's okay.
Well, we're not here for the game show hour, I promise, but I did have to ask you that because I was like, wow, that is really, really awesome. So you do, though, have a brand new book coming out, and it's, well, this one is about ghosts, but it's not your first delve into the world of the weird. What brought you into that? What got you to be considered a connoisseur of the bizarre?
We always, you know, on this show, we talk about everything from aliens to ghosts to the bizarre, supernatural, undefined mysteries. You know, you can't figure it out. Just anything you might see a special on Discovery or History or whatever. And so, and we just affectionately call it the world of the weird. So we love all the topics that you've done stuff on, not just the ghosts that we're going to talk about today.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I've kind of always been into since I was a kid, and I kind of trace it back to my first experiences with the world of the weird, which was through the Guinness Book of Records that would come out every year when they were those little paperback books. And I love the first section of the book, I think it was called The Human Bodies, with all sorts of oddities. And my favorite was Robert Wadlow, the world's tallest man ever, 8 foot 11 and a half inches tall. They had the photos of him, you know, every year different books would have different photos and they'd have the stats about his growth and, you know, a few tidbits here and there about his life. And I just couldn't believe that this guy could, a human body could get that big.
Right.
I mean, it was crazy. Like, I think by the time he was 5, he was, you know, taller than his dad and carrying him around like he was nothing. Like, just incredible.
As you're going to soon find out, we're wont to do on this podcast, we go off on tangents. You mentioned Robert Wadlow. So we're from the Midwest, and I spent a good amount of time in St. Louis. At the time, I was selling radio advertising. And when I was selling radio advertising, one of my clients was this really well-known bar in Alton, Illinois, called Fast Eddie's Bon Air.
Mm-hmm.
And at Fast Eddie's, they had one of Robert Wadlow's shoes because he's cool. From that area.
Yeah, he was born there.
Yeah, yeah. And it was just so funny sitting there drinking beer and eating burgers and just staring at this shoe. It's like, no human could have worn that. There's no way. There's absolutely.
I was telling John before the break, you know, I love whenever we travel, we always go to the Ripley's Believe It or Not museums, and just about every one of them has the Robert Wadlow.
Yep.
Some of them are the animatronic, like you push a button and he stands up. But there is a picture going around of Shaquille O'Neal standing next to one of those Robert Wadlow mannequins.
Oh, that's cool.
And he looks like a child.
Yeah. Looks, yeah, it's weird.
I mean,
right?
Robert Wadlow is the better part of 2 feet taller. You know, he's almost 9 feet tall, you know, and Shaq's like 7 foot one. So yeah, it's crazy to see.
I'll have to Google that later.
Absolutely. There's another one where someone put Yao Ming in with them, like photoshopped it so they're all together and you can see like the difference in them. Yeah.
Yeah. He should have been 9 feet. One thing that, you know, it's a sad story because he died young. He
super
died at
22.
Young,
yeah.
And it's because he had a blister
in
that giant shoe on his toe, and he had a brace and he was away from where he could get, you know, quick medical treatment, and the blister got infected and gave him a fever of 106 degrees. And by the time he could get medical help, the fever was overpowered him, and he passed away from that. Yeah, so a blister on his foot brought him down, but he was still growing.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I don't think I knew that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Wadlow really got me into it. And there were the other people in the books as well. The guy with the crazy fingernails, and, you know, the little people, and the, you know, the world's heaviest twins, things like that.
Sure.
And I watched the Ripley's Believe It or Not show. You know, we used to watch that like at dinner time. So I love that. And then I watched The Elephant Man. Again, I was like 7 years old, probably, when I watched David Lynch's Elephant Man. And I was fascinated by it. I mean, what an incredible story. And it really stuck with me. So that was always kind of with me. And then I read, you know, I had those like Time Life books on, you know, ghosts and the paranormal. Those kinds of books were always in my collection. So I've always liked it since I was a kid. And then I started just getting much more into it, I guess. In college, I'd started a zine called Backwash, and that kind of got me going into the world of Sideshow again, and interviewing different people in the world of Sideshow, which was amazing. And that led to my book called American Sideshow. And then it just kept going, you know, these different paths of things I've always found interesting and odd, and wanted to share those stories with people.
There is no shortage out in the world of those stories to delve into.
It's really not.
You know, and you spoke of watching Ripley's, the TV show. Everyone knows Robert Stack being kind of spooky from Unsolved Mysteries. I'll put Jack Palance and his weird cadence voice from the old Ripley show against Robert Stack as far as a spooky any day. But that's just me. I just remember watching it as a kid and being terrified by his,
yeah,
believe it or not. So he'd do that big, heavy breathing.
That's right. Those guys are both great.
Yeah, right. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Delving into your newest book, Chasing Ghosts, this book covers like the whole gamut of paranormal, from ancient times to modern times and modern technology. And how do you, when you're writing a book, how do you tackle such a broad aspect? Or was it your idea to do the whole gamut, or was it to narrow it down? And then you just found that you had so much research that that's what it became.
No, I wanted to cover a wide range. It's always the challenge is always like, how do you find the right balance, and how do you cover enough and not go overboard, and also not like leave too much out. You know, you want to cover it in a good balanced way. But I like just how it all connects. You know, I guess one of the things that really got me into ghosts more specifically than just general interest from the world of the weird and growing up liking these things was the spiritualism movement from the late 1800s and early 1900s, modern spiritualism. And I've been getting into that quite a bit the last few years and collecting a lot of old books. I love those books published in the late 1800s, early 1900s. They're just full of these amazing stories and these amazing events and manifestations of ghosts and supposed words from the dead, you know, crossing the veil, and what mediums were doing and how they were doing it and what people believed. So I really love what was going on and telling those stories and seeing how mediums were being exposed or how they were fooling people, how magicians were going after them, you know, Houdini in particular. So there's just a lot of amazing storytelling. And it's just also one of these things where at that time, these millions of people believed, and it was just a thing like, okay, yeah, there's definitely life after death. There was no question about it. This is what it is, and we can go talk to people.
It was such an in vogue topic too. Like, it was something that the rich and well-to-do were putting seance rooms into their parlors or having people over. One of the, yes, the things that you talked about in your book, that's something that I went and toured, was the Winchester mansion, which was just a fun sprawling estate with weird idiosyncrasies. And that was another thing that she was dabbling with, you know, seances and the paranormal. And, you know, there's stories of whether it was because she wanted to save herself from the ghosts of the people that her fortune had killed and blah, blah, blah. It's such a different time. And we see that and the early 1900s, late 1800s, and then we kind of go away from that through part of the century. And then now we're back into a heyday, so to speak, of, you know, you can turn on and there's tons of TV shows dedicated to the subject. Sometime in the mid-century, it was almost kind of taboo. is that something through history they see a lot, the love, hate, cooling, warming of the subject? Or is that just because of technology we've been able to see it so easily?
I think maybe there's a little bit of both involved. I think maybe also with spiritualism, it kind of coincides, like when it sort of started to fade away by the 20s, 30s, you know, it coincides with other forms of entertainment, which might have had something to do with it. People are starting to be drawn towards other ways to spend their time versus going to seances. Because you're right, that was like a thing to do. You know, even if you weren't a huge believer, you might go to a seance for entertainment. Mark Twain would go to seances for entertainment. You know, Queen Victoria would hold seances in England all the time. You know, Mary Todd Lincoln, I wrote about in the book, she had lots of seances at the White House. So these were things people did. But yeah, I think maybe part of it was a little bit of broadening entertainment options in the mid-1900s. Maybe a little bit of just frowning upon it and realizing also that, like, okay, maybe that maybe this isn't as factual as we think it is or legitimate as we think it is. You know, maybe some of Houdini's exposing was doing its job finally and getting people right to think twice. So I think there's probably elements of all those things. And now, you know, now there's just a huge resurgence. Like you said, it's like the shows are all over TV and turn on cable, and it's just, you could spend the whole day watching ghost shows. I think part of that also, I think there was a huge resurgence after Ghostbusters, you know, 1984, and people realize, like, oh, maybe I can use technology and maybe I could be a every man who just wants to go look for ghosts with some tech, you know, and see what I can find.
I'll get a PKE meter. Let's go.
Yeah, I can do that. You know, and then you had the success of Ghost Hunters with the two plumbers, and that's like, oh, those are just two ordinary guys also. I'm an ordinary guy. I want to go ghost hunting. And it just starts to become accessible, and it's kind of fun and it's interesting. So I think it's, you know, I think people are always going to be curious about this topic. You know, is there life after death? Is, you know, is as old a question as we have in humanity. So it's not going to go away.
That's not going away is right.
One of the words you just used that I think is also applicable to your book is accessible. I'm going to read a quote from the book here for the listeners. You go on to say, I'm not so sure that I've never seen a ghost. Part of it certainly comes down to personal views, but it also depends on one's definition of seeing a ghost. We have a tendency to think that ghosts, apparitions, spirits, specters, and wraiths just appear in front of us like in the movies. A translucent thing that floats through the dark, creepy hallways and cellars. But what if the deceased are projecting themselves into our minds while we're awake and dreaming? What if we're seeing ghosts a lot more often than we think and we just can't acknowledge it? You know, these are good, really cool, good questions. It made that, you putting that in the intro made the book so much more accessible to me, because I've said a lot of times in the show before, I like the idea of your dead grandma floating over you, you know, and, you know, wearing her pearls. Like, I just don't believe that. I'm not saying I don't believe in the afterlife. I just don't literally believe that they're just kind of floating around like in Ghostbusters, you know, staring at us. Right. You open the door at the very top of the book to say, maybe we're thinking about this in the wrong way, or you know, it's and that for someone like me who tends to be a little bit more on the skeptical side, opens up everything else that the theories that you're bringing forth. And just wanted to point that out, but then also ask you a little bit about how you got there.
Well, I think a lot of that comes from just a lot of conversations I had with people in researching the book, in particular a few of the different parapsychologists, and the way they look at it was just, it was just different, you know, than, like I said, I think that's really true, is that we do have that thought, like you just described, of like grandma floating over you with pearls, like, oh, I haven't seen that, you know, I'm not sure if I'm really believing that that's going on.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, a lot of the thoughts are like, oh, you're not like seeing them in front of you. It's all happening in your mind's eye. And one of the parapsychologists, Lloyd Auerbach, I thought he described it a nice way to me, where he said a place where there might be a spirit reaching out to you or might be present in an area, it might make itself known in different ways. People might perceive it in different ways. So maybe there's like a group of us in a room, and maybe you see something in your mind's eye. Someone else has like an olfactory sensation, smells like, you know, cologne or cigar smoke or something like that. Maybe someone hears something. Maybe someone experiences nothing and thinks that the other ones are all crazy, you know? Mm-hmm. So we might experience things in different ways. And maybe it's just something with how a spirit is able to connect with us, you know, mentally in one way or another. And maybe it depends on how receptive you are to that, or who knows what different kinds of energies we have that allow us to be, you know, received by a ghost, or receive a ghost's message, or whatever it might be, a presence. I don't know. There's just so much mystery to it. You know, I mean, it's one of these things, like, why is it hard to believe that someone could be more reachable by a spirit than maybe someone else, you know, whether it's through psychic or telepathy or whatever it might be. We see plenty of things that people can do that we can't do.
Like athletes. Seem to make
sense. Athletes, or think about like someone like autism or something, who can calculate
like
crazy
savants
numbers
in one way or another.
Yeah, savants. Like, how someone can calculate like an 8-digit number multiplied by an 8-digit number in like a second and a half makes no sense to me. Like, my brain can't possibly do something like that. I don't understand how anyone's brain can do it, but yet someone's can. So why not believe that maybe some other people's minds work in slightly different ways than their own and can have these experiences?
I think that's important. And I think that a lot of people put up, I don't want to say artificial barriers, but anything that's out of their wheelhouse is a no-no. And we're taught in, you know, in school, and if you go into the sciences, you need to be able to think outside of the box. But then if you go too far outside of the box, and they want to beat you with the box, so to speak. Yeah. And one of the things you said in the book that I thought was really interesting was there was a study that 45% of Americans believe in ghosts. So, and I will say this too. Of the 55% that don't, I bet they still don't want to go into a dark basement if they know no one's down there. You know what I mean? So even if they don't believe, there's still that feeling. Why are there then, as you've done all this studying, or why is it that so many people are so quick to disbelieve the experiences of others? Do you have a theory?
I mean, part of the theory might just be that it's always been, like you said, don't go too far out of the box.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe people think they're going to be thought less of if they believe it. You know, there might be just a fear of what other people's opinions might be if they come out and say, like, oh, I believe in ghosts, or I've seen ghosts. Maybe they're worried about that.
Yeah.
Or maybe they really don't believe it. But
Mark, do you think it also has something to do with the fact that we're talking about a subject that's not quantifiably provable one way or the other? And what I mean, and I'm not trying to take anything away from it, but my point being that any of these things, whether that's the existence of aliens, the existence of ghosts, the existence of God, because it's not quantifiably provable one way or the other, that allows for a lot of charlatans to enter into those spaces. And we've seen those in all three of these cases, whether it be the Warrens from the spiritual side, whether it be, you know, some of the televangelists that we've seen go down in flames from the religious side, you know, in UFOs, of course, there's plenty of folks that have been proven to be, you know, false prophets, if you will. Do you think that has something to do with it?
I think I imagine it does. Yeah. I mean, especially in an era like now where we have so much science, so much data, right? Like, so much is quantifiable that it's probably hard to just, you know, for some people to say like, well, yeah, you can't prove anything. And, you know, I want to see facts. I want to believe in numbers and statistics, and we don't have any of those. You know, there's no hard evidence, you know?
But do you ever wonder that if maybe we didn't have that stigma, that maybe people would be able to delve into this further and maybe get that evidence? I don't know. I think,
you know, I mean, one answer to that might be just looking back at ancient cultures, you know, which is the first part of the book, when we didn't have those thoughts. And people, I think, did believe in terms of their cultures were based more around what happens after death. And a lot of the cultures had similar thoughts and beliefs, even though they had no contact with each other. Like, I was always amazed when I was writing about the Egyptian culture and the Book of the Dead and like the Aztec culture and their beliefs. And you see how many similarities there are. And these cultures are thousands of miles apart. You know, there's no contact between them on the planet at that point in time. There was just no way to do that. So it's interesting to think like, okay, people had these similar beliefs, and no matter what culture we're in, there were lots of beliefs. And you wonder, like, you know, did they know something more than we know now that's been lost? Or is that just, you know, because they didn't have anything else to prove otherwise, they've, you know, found reasons to believe in ghosts more than we might now.
Yeah.
Similar to religion and God, right?
Right. I think so. And especially in the past and then where we're at right now, something you said, heck, it's on the jacket of your book, ghosts are everywhere. That's incredibly true. Everywhere is in pop culture, and in religion and in our history and in people's minds and just out there. And you had a vast history to dig through. How did you choose your stories, or did you have certain ones you wanted to talk about, or did you seek out specific things and see where it led you? How'd you pick what you wanted to put in the book?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot. That was tricky.
I mean, right. Like it could be 9,000 pages and that's volume one. And
totally. You know. Yeah. There's no shortage of stories. That's for sure. I guess in terms of like going back in history, there were things I knew I wanted to cover. Certain stories that I thought were, you know, you definitely want to hit on to kind of help tell the story of how we've evolved in culture and humanity. And then as you start to study those, you start to find other things, you know, like, oh, when I'm learning about this culture, I find about this culture. Okay, let me dig into that a little bit more. And you start to find other little stories there. So you kind of go on these different paths as you're researching. And then from there, figuring out, okay, well, some of these are interesting to include, can't include everything. But in terms of the ancient culture, I just kind of wanted to give a good spectrum of many different cultures with somewhat similar beliefs in one way or another, to kind of show how no matter where you were or what your culture was, you had some kind of similar belief. And then there were other stories too. I mean, just going up a little bit further into history with like stories about purgatory and maybe how those sort of stem from other beliefs. And then some of the different occultists and mystics who were trying to speak to spirits, and, you know, like John Dee and Emanuel Swedenborg, and you know, I just find their stories amazing. And there were more guys like that, but again, I had to like kind of draw the line somewhere. But it's interesting to show their stories, you know, again, just kind of showing the progression of people's beliefs and how we get to eventually the second section of the book, the modern spiritualism section. And then again, showing how it continues into haunted places and you know, obviously everything going on today. So yes, there is a lot to choose from. And it was definitely a little challenging to pick and choose, but definitely start with things I knew I wanted to get into and kind of just branched out as I researched and found interesting stories to include.
Speaking of interesting stories, you mentioned one of my favorites that I don't think as many of us, I certainly wasn't before I started doing this podcast, aware of, and that's Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and his, not only his tie to spiritualism, but just the world of the weird as well. And he was into a lot, you know, and obviously we all just know him from the books he wrote, but how far down the Arthur Conan Doyle rabbit hole did you go?
A little bit. I took a little journey down that rabbit hole because it's a good one. And it is pretty amazing how, I mean, he's immortalized because of Sherlock Holmes, but he was really looking to be, you know, to live on forever just through his afterlife. He was sure that it was a real thing.
Right. And,
I mean, he was probably one of the biggest evangelists of spiritualism, you know, around Europe and traveling all over America, talking about how real this phenomenon was and really believing in various mediums.
He was big into ectoplasm and things like that. I remember him doing tours and talking about that when we did our episode on ectoplasm a long time ago.
Yeah, he would have huge lectures and they'd be packed. You know, people would be fine to get inside of his lectures to hear him speak. And he, of course, you know, famously befriended Houdini. And so they had this, you know, awkward relationship where Doyle is trying to convince Houdini that this is real, and he believed Houdini had powers, psychic powers, and could communicate with the dead. Houdini's like, no, I don't. Like, I can tell you how I can do different things. I can tell you how these mediums are doing, but it's not real. And Doyle's like, no, it's real. And eventually his wife, you know, Lady Doyle, she's a medium as well, and she's holding seances. And there's a famous story, which I mentioned in the book, where they invite Houdini to, I think they were staying in Atlantic City. And they invite Houdini up to their room, and Lady Doyle gives a reading and channels his mother and writes like 15 pages of notes from his mother. And Houdini, you know, was very, very fond of his deceased mother. And he looks at these notes and he's like, yeah, this, none of this, she would have said none of this. First of all, she even speak English. So, I'm telling you, this is not my mom. And Doyle, you know, Arthur Conan Doyle was offended. He's like, how dare you? Are you saying my wife is not for real. Are you calling her a fraud? How dare you say such a thing? And so that kind of strained their relationship a little bit. But Doyle went on truly believing. I mean, he even believed in fairies. You know, he wrote a book called The Coming of Fairies, and there were like two teenage girls who were creating photos of fairies, and just, you know, obviously it was a hoax. But he wrote this book, and they have all these amazing photos in the book of these girls with the fairies out in the woods. And he was like, yeah, there's fairies too. You know, he really believed it. He had a spirit who was from ancient times that was speaking to him and his wife named Phineas. And Phineas would give them all sorts of guidance on, you know, travel plans, where to buy a home. You know, maybe Lady Doyle was sort of using Phineas to help convince her husband of things that she wanted. I don't know. But they took a lot of advice from Phineas, the spirit. So he was definitely an interesting case, and he believed right to the end. I mean, he, even after Houdini sort of butted heads with Marjorie the Medium, the Witch of Lyme Street, which was a famous story from the 1920s,
mm-hmm.
he still was like, nope, Marjorie's for real, convinced, and still was, you know, singing her praises after, you know, Houdini did everything he could to expose her.
Didn't Houdini around the same time also offer like a huge cash reward if you could prove that ghosts existed or something to that effect?
Yeah, I think he offered a $10,000 reward.
Yeah, that sounds right. $10,000.
Yeah, there's actually a picture of him holding the check in the book. And then he was also that the case I just mentioned with Marjorie, the Witch of Lyme Street, that was part of a Scientific American magazine contest where they were offering $2,500 if a medium could prove to their panel of experts that they were legitimate. And of course, the panel included Houdini along with the magazine editors and you know, professors from Harvard and very distinguished people. And Marjorie had convinced them all but Houdini.
Hmm.
And one thing I love about that is how this woman, she was a housewife in Boston, and she learned to do all these things, you know, to manifest, you know, ectoplasm and to make bells and boxes ring from afar and have the spirit of her deceased brother Walter speaking to people and making things levitate and float around the room. I mean, she did all these amazing manifestations, you know, and held all these seances. And she did this for no money. She just did it to do it. Originally, she did it to, I think, help her mother get over the loss of her son, Marjorie's brother.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke with her great-great-granddaughter, and she was, you know, describing how she thinks that this was mostly to help her mother kind of deal with her grief. And then it sort of got picked up when word got around, and now she had to kind of perform, you know, on the bigger stage all of a sudden.
Yeah.
But how did she learn these things? You know, how
right.
did she learn things that, like, even Houdini was having some, like, I'm not quite sure how this is working, to fool some of the greatest magicians who've ever lived when you're a housewife in Boston? It's really an incredible story. And a lot of mediums were like that. There were a lot of women who became mediums, and I think it was a very empowering thing for them. All of a sudden, they're an authority on a, you know, the religion. All of a sudden they have a position of power. You know, they're able to do things where it's like a job basically they couldn't have had. They didn't have as many opportunities, obviously, in those days. So
there
was an interesting new job with a lot of power and respect.
Well, there's not the only times that in history there have been people that are helping, quote unquote, I'm doing air quotes that you can't see, people that are also have been called grifters and have different levels of notoriety. And one of the other groups that you talked about, John mentioned earlier, were Ed and Lorraine Warren. They've kind of had a resurgence in the past few years with the Conjuring movies. Not that they were ever really out of the limelight, but do you feel polarizing figures like them and the mediums of the past that may have been proven wrong or not proven wrong, do they affect the paranormal community when such embellished movies, like the Conjuring movies, are embellishments even of what the Warrens come out? Does that hurt the paranormal when it's introduced to new audiences, or do you see it as just a means to introduce new people to it?
I think there's probably a little bit of both. I mean, I think maybe you have some of the mediums who were just, you know, very fraudulent, would turn people off to believing any of this could possibly be true. So you might say, oh, there's no way any of this is legitimate. It's all garbage. You know, look at so-and-so and so-and-so. So if there are people who can legitimately do things, they're sort of spoiled by these other people who, you know, were fakes, right?
Right.
So I think that kind of hurts. But on the other hand, it's entertaining and it might turn people onto it just in terms of being an interesting thing, which I guess would be my case. I find it fascinating. So it makes me want to read more about it. And by virtue of that, learning about all different kinds of people and you know, what might or might not be legitimate. So I think maybe you get a little bit of both. I mean, yeah, I think you see that in the UFO community too. There was, like you mentioned earlier, there's plenty of people who were false prophets, and especially in the 50s, who had all kinds of wild stories. And they make anyone who believes in the UFO then look foolish, because like, oh, you're like that schmo, you know? So it's right. Not exactly helping people who want to be taken seriously in any way.
And those same charlatans are out there selling things and taking advantage of people that just have blind faith.
Yeah.
And that's something we've seen time and time again. And it can be something as simple as, you know, asking for money in exchange to see this thing that never happens. Or, you know, to me, a lot of like the companies out there that are making these electronic devices that will detect ghosts for you, or these, what are they called? Talk boxes or whatever. You know, I think that's just all a bunch of electronic junk that they're, you know, it's a quick, make a quick buck type of thing. Not to say that there aren't ghosts out there, but I just don't think that these machines that people are miraculously coming up with are anything more than an ability. So I guess what I'm saying is that those companies and those people being out there doing that stuff actually really hurt the genuinely curious and the genuinely perceptive and the folks that want to figure out what is behind that thin veil.
Yeah, I think, you know, a parapsychologist wouldn't use any of that technology to try to find a ghost. They might use some technology to show what's going on that's not a ghost. You know, this is why you're feeling something paranormal right now, because there's this crazy electromagnetic field going on from this machinery behind the wall or whatever it is. And that's what this meter is telling me, not that there's a ghost here, you know? So technology might be used in that way. There is one interesting story though, about, you mentioned the talk boxes, spirit boxes, which are trying to capture electronic voice phenomena, you know? So you hold it up and you feel like, okay, I'm scanning through different wavelengths through the radio, and maybe the ghost is able to communicate through one of these wavelengths or something like that. Somehow they're able to ride through this technology and get a recording. And people claim to have recordings that you can hear things, and don't know how much of that is you hearing what you want to hear versus what's actually maybe just noise or something else. But there was an interesting case. I talked to a couple paranormal investigators who worked at the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park in Colorado, you know, which is famous for being where Stephen King was inspired to write The Shining. And I've been there. I've done the ghost tour there, and I grew up in Colorado actually. So, always liked that place. But these guys, they've led tours for years, and they were saying how they were familiar with some of the ghosts. They were saying that they were friendly with some of the ghosts. And eventually, I think they stopped hearing from some of them. They felt like maybe the tours were wearing on them, or they didn't like how people were treating them on the tours, whatever. So they tried something unique one night, and they used the spirit box. But what they did was, instead of all like listening to something that was recorded and then saying, oh, did you hear this? Oh yeah, I heard that too. And you have that sort of groupthink mentality. Like, yeah, we all heard the ghost say this. They had one guy put on headphones and, you know, a blindfold, basically like have some sensory deprivation except for the headphones and what he was hearing. So he might be on over in this room, and then the other guys might be, you know, a distance away from him, maybe another room. And those people might be asking questions to get a response from the ghost. And so the guy with the headphones would say anything he heard through this spirit box. So if he heard something, he would just shout it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said that the things he would shout out would feel like answers to the questions that were being asked, even though he didn't know what the questions were. So it's an interesting technique.
That would be a hell of a thing to witness. That is amazing.
Yeah, I spoke to someone also who leads ghost tours at the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum in West Virginia, which has a very creepy past and lots of great ghost stories there. And she tried this method as well and had some great stories and great results from it. Of like, I didn't know till afterward that this was the question asked, but this is what I heard and this is what I shouted out. So yeah, you're not being influenced by anything, and it's honestly what you're hearing, and it's you know, makes you wonder. Again, not saying that this is all legitimate, but it was interesting, and it does make you wonder if something might be happening.
We understand so little of the world around us, that even that's in front of our eyes. To write things off because of learned reasoning and things like that just seems just ignorant to me. So it's fascinating. And one thing I liked about your book is it's an amazing place to start. People can read this and it reads and goes through very easily. And it's also very comprehensive. And that's not an easy thing to say. John paid you one of the, a great compliment. We were talking about it. He goes, this reads really well. I liked it. And we get a lot of books and some of them are not as easy to chew through, you know, to use a turn of phrase, you know, they read like stereo instructions, not the case here. New readers, this is brand new coming out on the 28th of September. What tips do you have for new readers that are interested in the paranormal that like your book? What are their next steps? What do they do? What do they learn? What should they do?
I would go through the bibliography after you like it. If there's something you like, it's broken up by chapter and you can dig into things much more because there's so much more. And I tried to cover as much as I could without, again, going too crazy and not leaving room for other stories, but there's a lot to dig into. I mean, you know, you can dig into more of those Victorian era spiritualism stories, different mediums. I cover a lot of different mediums and the different kinds of effects they produce and the stories behind them and whether or not they were exposed and how they were exposed, if they were. And there's a lot of interesting ways that those happen. I mean, one of them I love is precipitated paintings, which are spirit paintings. Basically, a medium produces a painting that's painted by a spirit on a canvas. People would go sit in front of it and see a painting appear right before their eyes. Perfect, like a beautiful painting. And like, how did they do that? And it took, I talked about a certain magician who really honed in on it and did a lot of work to figure out what they were doing and believed he figured out the technique and tried it and was successful. And he eventually got worked into Howard Thurston's act on stage. So there's just a lot of great stories in there. So I think it'd be fun to, if you like the book, if you like Chasing Ghosts, dig into some more of the stories. It's everything there is in the bibliography. You can look up a lot more and go from there.
Speaking about what's next for you? Do you have anything else planned in this whole, I mean, this is your bread and butter. What's on your horizon? Any idea?
Yeah. In fact, hopefully we can talk again when this one comes out, 'cause I'll be writing about some UFOs. So.
Well, that is right in our wheelhouse.
<You're>
right.
Feels like a natural next step.
let's just schedule it now. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's once again, no shortage of information and,
oh my God, leads. No. And I'm already inundated.
Yeah, I bet. If everyone wants to find you, what's the best places for them to find you? What's your best place to purchase the book? Where should everyone go?
Well, you can buy Chasing Ghosts. It's from Quirk Books. You can go anywhere you buy books, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any independent bookstore. You can find out more about me and my books at markhartzmanbooks.com. It's markhartzman, books.com. You can find me on social media, just usually my name, or you can go to Weird Historian, weirdhistorian.com, on Instagram at Weird Historian. That's a lot. Just look for Chasing Ghosts at Amazon or any bookstore and go from there.
Or just go to the show notes right here, because we're going to have links to all of this, so it's gonna be very very simple.
Yeah. And Nation, you really should, if you're looking for a good book on the subject that's comprehensive but not crushingly so, you know, it's not, you're not getting into War and Peace. This is, it's great. It also doesn't make any assumptions for you, the book. Mark, I thought you did a really even-handed job of just like here are the stories that come from ancient times all the way through current day, but it doesn't beat you over the head with it. It allows you to draw your own conclusions. And so believers and skeptics alike, I think, would really, really enjoy this book. I'm certainly glad that I spent time with it.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate hearing that. That wasn't my intent. So yeah, that's great.
We should always be your intent, just to make John and I happy when you write. That's the only thing you got to worry about.
That's it.
You know, no one knows one way or the other, right? Like
right.
to say it's this way or that way, you know, that'd be, none of us know for sure. So
absolutely,
you do have to draw your own conclusions.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to it. We're gonna keep you on that hook for the next time with UFOs or whatever. We can talk fairies, we can talk whatever you're gonna write about, because it was a blast. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you. I'd love to come back.
Well, Nation, we'll be right back with more Hysteria 51.
Nation, welcome back. That was Mark. Mark is great.
God, Mark's what an asshole. Writer. Ugh, what an asshole, right? No, he was really great. He was, I was telling him during the break when we were chatting with him, I'm looking forward to reading the back. He's got a book on Mars that I've already ordered. I'm looking forward to reading.
It was kind of weird when you asked him to stare at your feet.
Don't read the back and forth. He asked if he could stare at my feet. That's, you got to watch the chat when we're in these Zoom meetings.
Oh, sorry about that.
It always is awkward when you say dumb shit like that, and then I feel bad for the other people.
So, all right. So here, one thing that he brought up, or one thing that he spurred a thought to me.
Okay.
And it's something that I'd love to dive in deeper at some point. And it's the kind of the science, we've talked about this before, but the scientific side of the supernatural. There was, I forget the name of it, but there's an English group, that researches, various, ghost sightings and things that like that, but they only use the scientific method. And like, a lot of folks think that they're too heavy on that. But anyway, the point is I love finding the scientific aspects or angles to this stuff. And one thing that I've been thinking about lately, forget about whether ghosts are real or not. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. But the fact that like he was talking about the talk box and somebody being, blindfolded and not being able to hear anything mm-hmm. and in another room, and that somehow what that person would say would correspond, whether that the words they were given came from a spirit or whether the words they were given came through telepathy or whatever. So many of the things that we talk about on this show could be easily explained by string theory, right?
Well, I think you said something really important there, though. Easily explained by string theory. That sounds like an oxymoron.
That's true. But like, you know, the whole we always talk about the two protons being a million miles away and being reactive to each other and being tied. That the string, yeah, you know,
depending on if you're looking at them or not.
Yeah. But then also one starts rotating one way and then a million miles away the corresponding proton rotates the other way. I'm getting that wrong. Scientists, write in. But the point is, whether it's spirits or whether it's us communicating with each other or whether it's just electricity or some other force, it is so interesting. Like you said, there's so much we don't know. Maybe that's just the science of how the spirits talk to us. Maybe it's the science of how we accidentally telecommunicate with each other. Or maybe it's some third option that I'm not thinking of right this second. But, you know, I bet you all of it has an explanation if you get deep enough. You know, it's not just all woo-woo. Like, there is an explanation, even if it is real.
It's funny you just said that. You brought up something that I've just started the TV show Manifest. It's three seasons in, and it's there's a plane that's flying, and they have turbulence, and the turbulence stops, and they land, and it's been 5 years, and to them, it was no time whatsoever. It was 5.5 years. And they're realizing in the show, and I'm only in like deep into the first season, how our brains are connected through like a neural net, through electrical impulses and things like that. And it's kind of like what you were just saying. That's kind of like the whole premise of the show is we don't really know what's going on in the mind. Nor do we know it's, you know, you definitely not.
Even in physics, right? Like, and how interconnected things truly.
Well, that's kind of like what I was telling Mark is like the, what we don't know about the world is astounding.
You could write a book about it.
Do you think we'll ever know? Do you think we as the living will ever know the truth about the afterlife before we, the proverbial we die?
When you say we, do you mean we as humanity?
Yes, or
do you
not, mean like as, not you and I like going out to figure it out our own humanity. Well, no,
like there's the one answer is maybe a second before you die, you're still technically alive.
No, I mean like, and here's how, you know, eighth graders are learning about it, you know, in school.
Oh, yeah. I don't.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a heady one. Maybe I'm totally wrong, but you also talked about this with things like that, and if they were talking to one another, and it could still be described by science. What would it take for you to believe in the paranormal? Would it be your grandmother with her pearls floating over you, going, "John, clean your fucking ass," or does it like have to be something a little less tangible?
Well, I think. It's a question. The question is, what are you asking me to believe in?
Everything I fucking say, period. We can start with the afterlife. Yeah, we can start with the afterlife, then we'll just move on to everything else I say.
You know, like, I believe in God.
You believe, like, in the afterlife. That's a
start, right?
You believe in the afterlife.
Non-tangible things that I believe in. But then the question is, like how far does that extend? Do I believe that there are angels floating around? Are they here on Earth, engaging in spiritual warfare? I don't know. And then that takes it a step further. Is my grandma floating around somewhere in pearls saying hi to people? You know, there's a line somewhere in there where I stop believing, and I can't tell you exactly where that line is. But it's somewhere in the middle. I'm not on the far end of the spectrum where, like, I don't believe in anything, you know. I believe in God. I believe in the afterlife. I believe there's a lot out there we don't understand and can't explain.
And
I'm just not sure where the line stops.
I hope there's a demon out there listening to this somewhere going, like, he's going to learn today. He's going to learn today. I don't know. You've heard us drone on and on about our thoughts on the afterlife and the paranormal. What are your guys' thoughts? I'd love to hear it. And because we're going to be doing a voicemail episode coming up, call and let us know, and this can be a couple minutes long, if you have a specific experience that you've had, call and let us know. Maybe we can do some listener stories of a paranormal experience that caught you off guard, that you feel was real, that you are willing to share, and you don't have to use your name. And at the end of it, you can even say, or the beginning, we'll edit it out. You can tell us if you want us to modulate your voice. They won't even hear your voice. You don't have to give us your name. I think that'd be fun to dive down some stories from listeners. It's something that we can do here coming up. And that's at 773-669-7277. Again, 773-669-7277. Where else can they talk about this stuff, John?
Well, before I tell you, one note to, you know who you are. We love you. And we want you to call in, and we appreciate you calling in and telling amazing stories and jokes. But don't call in under the auspices of telling us a paranormal story and then spend 10 minutes with a punchline of, and C-Bot did it.
Wait, sorry. I thought that was really funny.
We get enough of that from C-Bot. We don't need more. This is a genuine ask for folks to share, and we will play them non-judgmentally and just share them with the world. So we don't want the joke voicemails in there for this one.
Yeah.
Any other voicemail you normally would leave, go ahead, have fun, and we'll see if it makes it.
And just say at the beginning, just say this is for the paranormal voicemail episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Easy
and
peasy.
If you want to write about it and you want to talk to other people about it, a really good place to start would be our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just go to facebook.com, search Hysteria Nation. It's where we all hang out. C-Bot hangs out, talks about the topic of the week, talks about anything else that might be tickling the back of our brain that day.
Also, if you're on Facebook and like hanging out, check out our Facebook group. Like you said, Hysteria Nation, go into the featured posts and find our Discord server. We have a Discord server. I'm on there quite a bit. We talk, we post lots of photos. There's memes and dumbass shit and banter. And, we can talk about whatever you want in there. And it's a more loose format, just back and forth. So if you use Discord, make sure to check that out. Also, Patreon, patreon.com/hysteria51, Up All Nights, Mad Blur Hysterias, all sorts of radio dramas, lots of fun on there. Voicemail, like I said, again, that number is 773-669-7277. If you forget any of this stuff, where they go, John?
Gofopedia.com.
GOFOPEDIA.com. Or
Hysteria51.com. Yeah. And boy, I don't even think I've told you, Brent. I was lurking on our own Discord the other day. I was lurking to see what's going on. Folks having a nice chat is great.
Yeah. We got you in there, and today we were talking about I don't remember something about me being a genius, and then they told me I was full of shit, and they all talked about if I could never be a genius if I was stupid enough to make conspiracy bots. So that was fun.
Oh my gosh! Well, I need to come back more often.
So, oh, that was fun.
Again, a huge thank you to Mark Hartzman. Guys, check the book out. Check his links. He's got his own podcast. He's got his own Weird Historian website. They are gold. Really, his writing is really good. Go check it out. And you can find all those links in the show description. With all that said, I've been Brent.
I've been John.
He's been Conspiracy Bot.
Stay woke, meet sex.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. John and Brent will be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite. Join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a Fourth Hand Joint.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.